The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Good morning. It is Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, the day that you can join in and share a concern. Of course, I don't know right about this time. You may have boulders in your shoe. I completely understand, and we're here to help take it out, all right? To join in, 770-533-770-KMED, email Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. Read them all. Try to answer to as many as I can, but, you know, one guy. By the way, we do have 105.9 back up. It's a little lower power than it was before. We're going to have to do a little repair work on an amplifier, but still, we got the that signal back on for Grants Pass. 99.3 is back up today. That was a network outage that ended up causing that problem. Now, of course, I don't know. You know, when it comes to Spectrum, this could be a conspiracy theory for Tuesday. But, you know, I go on the air about 10, 11 after 6 in the morning, and the network outage happened from Spectrum at 6:08, and it went back on at 8:35, I think, is when the network came back on. So at the very so that was it. Spectrum was trying to keep the truth. You know, we'll just go down that conspiracy theory. Anytime talk radio gets taken out, and it's always a conspiracy theory to keep the truth from going out there. Although I'm sure that there are probably people working within these companies that would like that. You know, oh, yeah, sure. Go ahead. Sure. Go ahead. All right. But anyway, we can talk about whatever's on your mind. Catherine Green's going to join me here in a few minutes. Catherine Green, actually an hour from now, Catherine Green is running against Pam Marsh. And you may not have heard much about her. Pam Marsh, pretty popular within this district, the 5th District, state rep. Catherine Green is probably known best for Children's Defense Fund, you know, being the person about that and looking for health freedom. And she's running as a Republican. We'll talk with her about some of the issues coming up here. And she reached out, especially because I was just mentioning how the chamber pack, you know, everybody talks about, you know, the chamber, you know, Chamber of Commerce is, you know, big, big, heap, you know, hard conservative kind of organizations. And nothing could be further from the truth. And chamber pack, as an example, went out and endorsed Pam Marsh. I was mentioning yesterday, what the heck? You know, why would the chamber pack endorse Pam Marsh? I mean, remember, the fire map program was sponsored and carried by Pam Marsh and Jeff Golden, both from Southern Oregon. Yeah. And they're still walking around and people aren't hassling them all that much. It's just, oh, we're just having a little bit of a political disagreement here. Although, you know, what we're going to try to do is put tons of costs on rural property owners to make up for the fact that nothing is done about the federal forests. See, the state representatives and state senators, you know, Golden and Marsh, they can't do anything about the federal government. So instead, well, what we're going to do is make you encase your property in asbestos. Oh, wait a minute, we can't do asbestos because we probably banned that a while back too. So, you know, because we're Democrats after all, but still, yeah, I know there's still asbestos available. No, I'm not advocating that you spray it on your house, all right? Probably have a hazmat team come out for you. But still, the point being is that these two elected representatives here in Southern Oregon, mostly from the south of Jackson County, Jeff Golden, Senator Jeff Golden and Pam Marsh, have done more to attack their constituents, at least the constituents living outside of the city of Ashland, than probably any other state rep or state senator. And Chamber PAC endorses them? Really? Actually endorsed Pam Marsh. I know she's very well liked by the people in her district for whatever reason, but it's like, oh my gosh, you want to talk about you know, voting for the people who are really going against you. But then a lot of the South County voters, you know, Talent and Ashland and things like that, as far as they're concerned, all that matters is that the agenda moves forward. The agenda moving forward. Just like the people that are being encouraged to vote for Matthew Rowan, hand-selected by Governor Kotick to be the judge in the district court judge, you know, 11th position. I'm telling you, we're going to have to wise up on some of this sort of stuff. That's also why I was suggesting, you know, if Tina Kotick picks Matt Rowan, maybe you should be picking Johan Pietila, you know? Are we going to let the Jeff Goldens and the Pam Marshes and the Tina Kotecks continue to pick the people within our administrative state? Are we going to let them continue to just get away with this? Will no one resist? Well, Catherine Green says that she would be an alternative. So we'll talk with Catherine a little bit after 7 o'clock. Looking forward to that. Jennifer Strickland's going to join me here in about 20 minutes. And she is a former international model. I think she modeled for Louis Vuitton and a bunch of others back when she was a younger woman. And she's big-time Christian now. And she's written a book about reclaiming womanhood. She says women must reclaim the feminine. Needless to say, she's probably not big on the on the transgender thing and having girls beaten up by dudes in a dress that end up getting into their sports. We'll talk with Jennifer here in a little bit about that. That and many other stories this morning. Now then, we had a couple of ballot box fires yesterday. It's a ballot box set on fire in Portland. One set on fire in Vancouver, Washington. They're looking for a Volvo, a dark-colored Volvo S60. Apparently, hundreds of ballots were destroyed. Only three, I guess, were destroyed in Portland, and a few hundred more in Vancouver. Apparently, there's an anti-fire coating or some sort of anti-fire system inside the Portland, which makes sense. All right, Antifa. The place gets set on fire by Antifa every now and then in the Summer of Love. So they decided to put like an anti-fire system inside the ballot box. And apparently it worked. Only three of them were damaged. They're going to get those replaced. But several hundred ended up going down in Vancouver. Didn't have any anti-fire coating there. But they're looking for a Volvo S60. That's the vehicle of interest. I got to tell you, if I were going to go out and commit some vandalism on a ballot box, and I'm not advocating, I'm not trying to give any ideas, I think the last car that I would use would be a Volvo S60, only because there just aren't that many of them. Volvo doesn't have the big presence out there. It'd be like, going out there and getting a Mitsubishi. Getting a Mitsubishi. Mitsubishi is what? About, 1/4 of 1% of maybe all the vehicles sold in the country right now. It's probably more than that, but it's not very much. Let's go ahead and grab a vehicle that that doesn't have that much of a presence and really sticks out there. But anyway, we'll see what happens if this ends up the person who ended up doing something like that. But yeah, it seems to me if you're going to do something like that, if you're going to do hinky, what do? You go out and you get a Toyota Corolla. A Toyota Camry, something like that, something absolutely vanilla, And you don't even want it to be something which is too much of a beater. You want it to look like a rental car, right? That's what you want to do when you're going to go out there and affect democracy, as the case might be. I don't know if this is related now, but there are some election people that are saying Oregon is now just leaning blue instead of just solid blue. Oh, it'd be still my beating heart if that were actually true. But anyway, we'll keep you up with that story as more becomes available, all right? This is the Bill Myers Show, and you're on KMED 99.3 KBXG. What's on your mind on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday? Happy to take your call.
I'm Travis Snyder.
22 minutes after 6, speaking of the Highway Patrol, or OSP in our particular case, I'm hearing rumors that there are OSP officers are going to be pulled off the road or won't be patrolling as much in Southern Oregon. I'm trying to track that down. Got that for some people up north that are saying that they were seeing some rumors about that. I don't know if this is true or not, but we'll let you know. As if we have enough troubles, keeping cops on the road around here in Southern Oregon to have the state maybe pull some away. Supposedly, this is being done because they're getting ready for the riots in Portland. In all seriousness, this is the rumor that's starting to spread. They're getting ready for a winter of love, going on. I don't know if that's going to be the case or not. I would certainly understand if they were to do something like that, try to get out in front of the potential riots from the mostly peaceful protesters, but we'll get back to you on that one, trying to track that down, okay? 770-5633, Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Ron Smith is here. Ron, you're running for Josephine County Commission. Good to have you on. And what you calling about, huh?
Well, I'm calling about that fire map.
And I want to talk to all the people out there that had their homeowners insurance increased and their power bills going up sky high. You know, that's directly related to Pam Marsh and Jeff Golden and their wild wildfire map that they put out on people.
Do you think that people have actually connected that fire map issue to Pam Marsh and Jeff Golden? Because I don't think they have.
I think a lot of people have connected the fire map to their insurance problems, mm-hmm. to their electricity bills. They may not understand it, but that legislation put all the burden on the power companies and the private property owners to stop wildfires, and it won't do anything for it. It's nothing, absolutely nothing that'll stop wildfires in that legislation.
Yeah, most of the wildfires, as I understand it, not that I'm any wildfire expert on it, I hope I never have to be, is that most of the big stuff comes off of the federal lands and then ends up burning into the private sector's land. Isn't that what happens normally?
Yeah, that's actually absolutely true. Very few fires that become catastrophic start on private property. The whole problem with that legislation is it was all designed to stop wildfires caused by power lines. And I really think that's a very, very small percentage of fires. But it put a tremendous burden on the power companies to protect and harden their lines. So what are they going to do with that increased cost? They're passing it on to the consumers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm already seeing that. Now, I have to admit, though, it's probably good that the power companies do get ahead of this and get the lines trimmed and such. I think the other part that Jeff Golden and Pam Marsh, their bill, you know, the Senate Bill 762 fire map bill, didn't address, though, is that one of the reasons why there may have been a cutback on some of the maintenance of some of these old wires out there is because the State Public Utilities Commission, also directed by Democrats, controlled by Democrats, said it was more important to go out there and put up windmills and solar power. I mean, that was where the emphasis was being placed. This is where your money had to go. And they were telling that to PG&E and Pacific Power and the various other suppliers.
Yeah, they forced them into doing this green energy. The power companies really probably weren't into it too much because they know it's a farce and will not produce enough energy to make a difference.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, a number of years ago, remember when we were doing the smart meter battle a while back here, Ron? You remember that, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you went back into the public record with Pacific Power was saying at that point, and actually told the PUC that we saw absolutely no benefit to our customers to go with a smart meter. But the PUC ended up forcing this because what the state of Oregon under Democratic control is doing, and frankly, you look at as kind of bills passed by Pam Marsh and Jeff Golden, is that it's not about having plentiful, affordable energy. A smart meter is about preparing you for expensive and intermittent energy, essentially, so that they can, shed the load when there are too many air conditioners on at one time in the summertime, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I just want to remind all the listeners out there that have had their insurance bill go up and have their power bill go up. Remember, you got to vote and vote Republican because these Democrats are actually just destroying our state. We need to vote red and we need to get out and vote. If you haven't voted yet, get your ballot in a drop box. Don't put it in the mail. Put it in a drop box and get out there and vote like your life depends on it because it really does.
Ron, I appreciate your call. Thanks for that. You be well. Let me go to Tom. Tom's in Talent. Hello, Tom. How are you?
Good morning, Bill. Yeah, your previous caller just talked about the drop boxes, and I think the fires highlight the vulnerability of drop boxes. And you people should not be putting it out in the boonies in a drop box. I mean, I guess they have drop boxes in libraries.
Yeah, in fact, most of the libraries here in Southern Oregon, at least many of them, I have a list of them someplace, but, you know, Phoenix, Ashland, Talent, I mean, everyone has someone in front of their library. Medford Library, the big main one, and also at the Election Center, they also have drop boxes out front. Yeah.
I think, you know, if nothing else, the fires highlight the vulnerability of drop boxes and this whole system they got set up for rigging the vote here in Oregon and across the land. And we really need to go back to the old days where you walk into a room and if you show them your ID and one person, one vote. The way it is right now, it is primed for vote rigging. And now we're getting set to, you're, like you just mentioned, that Portland's preparing for riots no matter what happens. And I think it just, it's terrible what has happened to the voting system. And it's depriving people of the one person, one vote. We have no idea when you cast your ballot if it's going to be counted and or distorted or thrown away, burned up. We don't know.
Well, even in the current system, all you can do right now is find out that, okay, yeah, your vote has received or your ballot was received. As far as to what happens after that, was it counted correctly? Can you actually cross-check it and guarantee what happened? No, you can't. You're not able to do that right now.
So, 4 points. I don't think computers should ever be involved in vote counting, voting, or anything like that. We probably could have a two-day voting on a weekend and no more. Not that it's vote counting going on for weeks afterwards. We need to vote in person, have an ID right there, and have it monitored by people who are watching everything.
You know, I like your idea, though, about weekend voting instead of making it during the weekday. I'd actually be okay with that. Good take on that. Thanks for that, Tom. 770-5633. We'll grab line three. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Hey, good morning, Bill. It's Deplorable Patrick, and I got to talk fast because I'm at work.
All right, DP, I won't tell anyone. Go ahead.
Okay, don't now. Yeah, please don't. Hey, do you think there's any chance or any way of getting rid of this foolish Northwest Power Council that you've talked about? I think I got the name right, but telling PPNL what to do. Can they be gotten rid of by a ballot measure or something?
Well, it's not the Northwest Power Council that is doing this. You're actually talking about the Public Utilities Commission is the one that actually comes up with the directions. And it's under the control of the executive, you know, the executive, which means the governor, ends up being that. So it ends up being a situation of who your governor is. And governors in Oregon are pretty predictably left. There we go. Okay?
That's my answer then.
All right.
Thanks so much, Bill.
All right. Thank you for the call. 770-5633. I think the Northwest Power Council exists so that we have politicians who have carried the water for the left for a long time. They get rewarded with a nice cushy job there. Later on. Anyway, hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
This is Miner Dave.
Hello, Dave. What's on your mind?
We only have one drop-off box for the whole county, and it's in front of the old courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. There's no other drop box anywhere else in the county. The only other choice is to mail it, which...
Now, if you were mailing in your ballot, I hope you would have done it a few days ago.
Well, in my case, my brother took me down to do some grocery shopping, and I happened to have my ballot that day, so I got to drop it off right in the box in front of the courthouse.
Well, Siskiyou County, amazingly large county, just like Josephine, you know, a couple of population centers, but that's about it. That is, you guys are really spread out there, aren't you? Well, really thin.
Yeah, yes. If you look at the county and you look at... District 1 that I'm in, or they call Bogus District, it's way bigger than landmass-wise. There's two of them like that. They're both up here in the northern part of the county. And then, like, Yreka is a really small district, but it's got more people in it than anywhere. You know, the whole county's got maybe 45,000 people that live here. And most of them live in Yreka.
Yeah, and that's smaller than just Medford is in Jackson County. And Jackson County and Josephine County considered small by population standards, although Jackson bigger dramatically, of course. All right, Dave, hey, I appreciate that, okay? Jennifer Strickland joins me here in a couple of minutes after news. I'm looking forward to talking with her. She's written a book about that. She's a former model Christian. She's not a former Christian. She's still a Christian. We'll talk about that. But she wrote a book, I Am a Woman. How does she know? Is she qualified to make that kind of a snap judgment? We'll talk with her about that coming up on The Bill Myers Show.
Josephine County needs strong, principled, conservative leaders to guide us forward. For position two, vote Chris Barnett. And for positions...
Trust American Industrial Door on Crater Lake Avenue, north of Vilas Road, and on Union Avenue in Grants Pass.
News Talk 106.3 KMED. You're waking up with The Bill Myers Show.
Kind of a strange time in which even the Victoria's Secret's fashion show ends up having a couple of transgender models. Right? Something seems to be, you know, wrong out there within the culture. Wanted to talk with Jennifer Strickland about that. Jennifer Strickland is a former model, and she wrote a book, and it's called I Am a Woman, Taking Back Our Name. Now, Jennifer, I got to have a little fun with you. Are you actually qualified to say who a woman is? Welcome to the show.
You know, it's crazy. I was born by a woman, raised by a woman. I have a daughter, and I'm a mother. So, yeah, I'm definitely qualified to define what a woman is.
Okay. Now, you actually have a ministry, right? And it's called You Are More. What is You Are More all about, please?
So we create events, resources, and mentoring that help women and girls find their value, identity, and purpose in Christ. We really just focus on identity. Mm-hmm. I started doing conferences for girls shortly after I left the modeling industry just to help them with their self-image and their body image. And, you know, you don't get your identity what you look like in the mirror. And then the selfie came out and Instagram blew up. And so I just kept writing books and Bible studies to help girls. Yeah, the selfie came out the month after my first book. And then, you know, the self-image problems among girls just went on steroids.
By the way, I wanted to ask, since you would know, having been in the modeling world, and I'll ask you more about that before we, you know, dig into the rest of the book. Where did the duck lip look come from? Do you know? Was there somebody in the modeling world that first did that, and then every young woman had decided they have to copy this in the selfie? You know, which you're kind of like the partial purse of your lip with it just slightly open. Is that a modeling thing? I'm kind of wondering where that came from. Do you know?
Well, back in the days when I was a model, mm-hmm. that was not attractive, and I don't think it's really changed.
Oh.
But today, you know, if they're not doing that, they're blowing up their lips with these injections. It's the same, you know, it's the same lie that I believed when I was struggling from anorexia and I was walking the runway for Giorgio Armani. Okay, it's the lie that I'm only as good as my appearance, my image, the applause that I receive. You know, and this is just a really exhausting way to live, and it's not healthy because our appearance changes our entire life.
Yeah, yeah. What era were you modeling for Armani and the other ones? Because you were an international model back in the day.
Yeah, I was in the 1995 mm-hmm. show season over there in Milan, Italy, with Armani, and did other campaigns for a lot of other Italian designers and European designers. I mostly worked in Europe, but also New York and Los Angeles, and did TV commercials and all of that. I was in the industry since I was only 8 years old.
Eight years old. Wow. All right. Mm-hmm. Any regrets about having got into that industry at that early of an age?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's really not healthy for girls to grow up in front of a lens and to have, especially, older men who are in their 40s and 50s looking at you through the camera all your life. I mean,
there's kind of a creep factor to that, isn't there? Isn't there, Jennifer?
Creep factor that I don't think my parents were really aware of, you know, because they were just so excited about the opportunities the business gave me. But unfortunately, a lot of those guys are creeps. Not all of them. Most of them are pretty good, but there's that 10% that definitely hurt me. And I ended up, I ended up starving myself for Armani. I was Barbie during the time that I was really suicidal, actually, using drugs and alcohol just to kind of quell the pain. There was a lot of internal pain that I went through, and I saw a lot of the rejection that the girls went through. And so when I walked away, I had a message for girls, that's for sure.
You know, it's Jennifer Strickland, by the way, is with me, and her ministry is You Are More. She's also the host of the I Am a Woman podcast. I know, she's really out there when you declare that these days. But she has a book about her experience, I Am a Woman, Taking Back Our Name. And I know that you're trying to get women and young girls to be okay. I mean, the body positivity image or body image positivity trend, would you say that's actually been a good thing overall?
You know, I think the pendulum has swung a little far. I mean, I was also pushing back against the you know, the Barbie image of thick, thin, anorexic models. I mean, yeah. I was definitely a part of shouting from the rooftops that that wasn't healthy for girls. But the problem with the body positive movement is that it's missing a key component. And it's really a biblical component of what the Bible says about our bodies. You know, the Bible says that our bodies are sacred, that they're holy, that they're intended for marriage. And the body posse movement doesn't regard the body as holy. It's sort of a thing that you can shake around all over the stage. You can go ahead and be like Lizzo, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Lizzo about that, because I was thinking that, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, yeah, we're going to appreciate all shapes and sizes and this and that and the other. But then to celebrate massive obesity when there's a massive health crisis out there doesn't seem to be the right thing to be doing too. Would you agree? You know, on that?
Absolutely. I mean, you walk into Target, the models have literally become obese. I mean, there is a healthy there's a healthy middle ground, but when a movement is not based on biblical values, it eventually self-destructs. Just like feminism has totally self-destructed. They don't know how to define a word woman anymore. The body positive movement is self-destructed because they teach these stupid things like a boy can be a girl.
Mm.
Okay, well that's
a part
biological impossibility.
Okay, so that's a part of the positivity movement then. That's one of the issues. I didn't realize
that.
Okay.
Well, it's all a part of this idea that the body's not holy. It's the whole same thing. The behind the body positive movement is maybe some really good, you know, athletes and so forth. But for the most part, this is the concept that you can shake your booty up on a stage at 400 pounds, and that's supposed to be applauded as well. No, the body is sacred. The body is holy. That's why I don't stand for abortion, because that's not healthy for women and girls. I don't stand for teaching girls they can be boys, because that's not healthy or true either. And we certainly don't want to model for girls that obesity is to be celebrated. I mean, so I think the pendulum swung way too far.
Okay, all right. By the way, Jennifer Strickland, the author of I Am a Woman, Taking Back Our Name. So is this only about the transgender movement that has taken over so much of the culture these days, or at least captured the imagination? Or is there a deeper message in this?
Well, it's an identity issue. I mean, the kids are in an identity crisis, which is the reason why I have stood out and spoken about this. You know, even though I knew that I would get backlash, you know, from people I love and know in the Pride movement. The Pride movement teaches this concept of sexual and gender identity. Okay, right there, those words don't go together. That sexual identity, those words don't go together. That is not how we form healthy identity in our youth. If I were to speak to a girl, for example, who'd been sexually abused, I would not teach her that her sexual urges and feelings for same-sex attraction are who she is. That's a lie. I mean, and that's what Parents Magazine is telling parents. If your kid comes to you and says they're gay or they're trans, you're supposed to say, thank you for telling me who you are. Well, we don't teach kids their sexual urges are their identity. I would tell that girl who's been sexually abused, you're worth protecting.
Mm-hmm.
Your body is sacred and it's holy. You're loved, you're seen, you're known by God, and He cares about what happened to you. And your feelings right now are not who you are, because your feelings are attached to the shame, for example, of your abuse. It is just so unhealthy to teach young people sexual feelings are identity, because those feelings change.
Well, I've often thought, Jennifer, that, you know, if you're going to say that your sexual feelings are your identity, well, if that's the case, and that all of this is supposed to be respected, then there's really nothing that would morally cut against being a pedophile, because, well, I just happen to love children. No, I really love children. See what I'm getting at? You know, that sort of thing. If we're just going to talk
Absolutely.
About whatever is our urge is something to be celebrated and identified with, isn't that the downside of it?
It is absolutely the downside, and it's a very slippery slope. We have the other side that is so basic, is that if I were to die tomorrow, my kids wouldn't stand up in my funeral and say she was a heterosexual cisgender, you know, she, her. No, my kids would stand up and talk about my verb. She was a mother. She was a servant. She was a minister. She was a writer. She was a speaker. She was a dedicated wife. She always made our home a place of love and belonging. They would talk about my the actions of womanhood. And that's what I talk about in I Am a Woman, is that being a woman is an action. It's not a pronoun, which is the most meaningless word in the English language. It's a verb. It's the action of bringing life to your family and to your community and to your environment. Being a man is an action. It's protecting. It's providing. We're not just double X chromosomes or XY chromosomes. So this whole movement, let me just tell you, it is a brainwashing movement. I don't want to make any bones about this. It is a thought reform movement that is trying to tear the next generation away from the beautiful office of motherhood, of being a wife and a mother, and embracing the beautiful things about what it is to be female.
Jennifer, why is it that so many women, or so many females, I guess, is that how are you supposed to put it these days? Why is it that there hasn't been more pushback on the transgender movement, especially with essentially the erasing of womanhood out of the culture?
Yeah.
Why hasn't there been more of a pushback? I would have thought that, you know, it's going to be up to the women to really take care of business on this. What say you?
Well, I think it's going to take men and women standing together. How did we end up in this place? Well, the feminist movement told men to sit down and shut up when it came to women's rights. The feminist movement completely emasculated men by saying, we don't need you, we're not going to take care of you, all the things woman was created to do, which was to support, uphold, and, you know, breathe life into mankind. I mean, the feminist movement taught women they would leave the home, climb the corporate ladder, deny men the rights over their own descendants, over their own children, right? Totally emasculate men, and then be happy, and the society would flourish. Well, they didn't honor men. They don't honor children in the womb. They don't. Why would they ever honor women? They don't honor the places that God has assigned and given as a gift for healthy masculinity and healthy femininity. So, yeah, the feminist movement was never going to stand up for girls because they never stand up for the family. Okay, number two. The answer is men and women standing together. In Genesis, it says we are to male and female together will rule, take dominion, and subdue the enemy and subdue the earth. So when men and women stand together, there is nothing we can't accomplish.
Are we at... I mean, you talked about the pendulum swinging back and forth. You talk about body positivity where it swung crazy. What level are we as far as the pendulum in the women aren't really women movement right now from the trans activists here? Where do you think we are? Has it swung all the way yet and it starts swinging back? Where would you estimate that pendulum is sitting right now?
Well, it's basically a mind virus that has seeped all the way down into our schools, from colleges to kindergartens. This is now deeply baked into the culture. It is not a pendulum. It is like, how are we going to take the flour out of the cookie? It is baked so far in that it is now acceptable for men to quote unquote change their gender and go into women's prisons, which I've spent a lot of time speaking in women's prisons. And that's another reason why I'm speaking up for them, because
I would imagine so. And then you hear about women getting pregnant from other women in the prison, right? And you guys,
oh, it's so evil. Ugh. It's so evil though. Not, you know, 90% of women in the prison have already experienced male violence. So how are they ever going to heal and rehab if they're exposed to more male violence? We really need to care about that. And then the girls, obviously, being exposed to naked men in their locker rooms, it's totally unacceptable. And it's going to take every man, every strong man, and every strong woman. You know, it takes about 5% of people in a society to turn back a brainwashing movement. If only 5% of us take a stand on this and don't move, it'll change. Every coach, every administrator, every teacher, every PE teacher, every broadcaster, you know, minister, people like me, people like you, we all have to take a stand and say, not on my watch. You're not getting to the girls' bathrooms.
No, no. I get that. Jennifer, could we actually, and it's not that I wish to blame men at this, because I am one, all right? But was this allowed to happen, or did this happen mostly because men allowed themselves to go soft on these culture battles?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, blaming...
In other words, men didn't do what men are supposed to do and what men had always done, you know, up to this point. Protecting.
Yeah, but I think, you know, men also have the heart that they want to please women, mm-hmm. and they do want to release women and let women be free and have their voice. And so the feminist movement used that sort of chivalrous character of men to sort of bow low and to submit and lift them up. You know, men laid down to lift up the bride. That's a biblical concept. So I think the feminism, I blame feminism more that it used that character, that servanthood of men against them and said, you don't matter and you're not important. And I'm just going to, these boots are made for stomping and I'm going to walk all over you. So yeah, I think men laid down too much. And I think women used their voices to destroy and to emasculate men and to negate the beauty of the family. I mean, it was really women who drove this culture away from the family. And then you have the pornography industry and all of that. I mean, there's men and women involved in this that are saying our bodies aren't holy, sex isn't holy, nothing is holy. So why would we act as if the children's bodies are holy? What's the big deal of putting them on hormones and having them change their sex and use their bodies as a toy? I mean, that is the pervasive voice about sexuality in our culture, and it's all a big lie.
All right, so you're not even talking about this being a pendulum then. You said it's completely embedded in the culture. How long do you think it'll take to wash this out? What do you think?
Oh, man. Well, right now, it's going to take really strong mothers and fathers, men and women, to stand up. Every pastor, every administrator, every single person should be doing this, but most people are in fear, and so they're not going to. But if the 5% of us take a very, very strong stance on it, and we train the next generation to understand this happened on our watch, we're not leaving you with this problem. Mm-hmm. It's our problem. It's our problem that men got into women's sports, not the kids' problem or the grandkids' problem. So if we die trying to change it and we speak the truth of identity into the next generation, I would say within 30 years, by the time our kids have teenagers, like my kids are just getting married now, I would say 50, probably when our grandkids are adults, if we are able to infuse in them the understanding that a male lays down his life to protect women and a woman lifts men and honors the home and protects the children. This is just the actions of being a woman that the next generation needs to understand.
Jennifer, where can people find out more about your book, I Am a Woman, Taking Back Our Name? Also find out more about you. What's the main website and people can go and take a look?
You can go to youaremore.org. That's the letter U, the letter R, MORE.org. That's my ministry. You can also find me on Instagram at @JenniferStrickland_author. But check out my book, I Am a Woman. I also do international book clubs where I am taking women through the book. And by the way, men love the book, too. All you have to do is take off the pink cover.
Well, pink could be okay for some things. All right. Pepto-Bismol. But, hey, we'll never. Hey, before we take off, I kind of wanted to ask you, what do you think is the future of modeling, given that you were so famed as a model back in the late 80s and the 1990s and, you know, doing Armani and everything else, you know, at that time? Is AI going to get rid of that industry in some ways? You know, artificial intelligence, in which you just kind of, you know, computer morph a model and put it in the clothes. What do you think about that? Or is there always going to be room for the human on this? What do you think?
Well, it's kind of a twisted industry. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if AI like replaced real women, but the truth is that business, it really hurts girls. And I was in it for 15 years. I know it very up close and personal. The real young girl is always going to be manipulated to believe that she's not good enough the way that she is. And I think the other real, real concern I have is these trans models, because they're going to get hurt, they're going to get violated, and they're going to be raised in an industry that teaches them your sexual urges are your value and your identity. And that's going to be very damaging, because those kids are already pretty fragile. So my heart would be just to warn parents, keep your kids out of that industry and keep the kids out of the porn off the phone, because it just destroys the beauty of male and female unity. Yeah, it destroys the beauty of what sex is really supposed to be about. And my heart is just to make a difference on this with the next generation.
Jennifer, I appreciate your time. And now I'm going to end it on a lighter note there. How effective is the typical model's diet of cigarettes, barley water, and barley water diet? Does that work?
Well, I saw a lot of girls starve themselves, but what ends up happening is you binge afterwards.
So, oh, yeah.
No, it definitely doesn't work.
Yeah, just like we thought. I was thinking, you know, it's what Linda and I, my wife Linda, you know, we'll be watching TV. Oh, yeah, she's definitely on the cigarettes and barley water diet. You can tell. But I guess now it's Ozempic, right? Now everybody has Ozempic face in the
modeling
world.
Oh, my gosh. It's so bad. Like girls, women and girls can't just be the best they can be in the skin that they're in. There always has to be another drug. There always has to be another shot, another pill to change the way that God made us, you know. But again, just every woman out there, just be the best you can be in the skin that you're in, but don't take all that stuff. It's not good for you.
All right, good plan. Jennifer, I appreciate you being on. Be well. God bless, okay? Take care.
Thanks so much. God bless you, too. Bye-bye.
6:59 at KMED. This is the Bill Meyer Show. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your dish helping keep you current. Find out about their services on clouserdrilling.com. It's a minute after 7. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, and KBXG Grants Pass. Catherine Green will join me. She wants to take Pam Marsh down in this upcoming election, so we'll have a conversation with her about the issues on the way. And this will be after Town Hall News. We'll also have the Hannity update, too, for that matter. Winnie writes me this morning, says, hey, Bill, how do we get vote by mail in Oregon, and what will we have to do to get rid of this? All right, Winnie, I appreciate your writing. It actually... vote by mail happened in 1998. It was November of 1998, the election at that point, and it was ballot measure 60. This was something that the citizens of Oregon did at that point. And by the way, it passed strongly. It passed strongly. I was not one of the people who voted for it. I was one of the 30% of the people who voted no. I didn't think it was a good idea even then, you know, although I'm not exactly say I was as baked in my political point of view as I am now, you know, these days. Wasn't in talk radio at that point, just as a dumb old music DJ, you know, that kind of thing. But even then I'm thinking, boy, this is not good. This is not a good idea. And I was just thinking that, you know, it was kind of a nod to laziness in my opinion. But yeah, it passed by almost 70% of the vote back in 1998. And the political scientist, now this is from a Wikipedia post, saying that the vote-by-mail system contributes to its highest-in-the-nation rate of voter turnout, 61% of eligible voters. Yeah, because it's easy to harvest, right? Easy to harvest as people go around and harvest the ballots, which, by the way, is legal in the state of Oregon. As far as getting rid of it, it would take another citizen initiative to either shoot it down. In other words, you'd have to get a ballot measure to repeal it, or you would have to have control of the legislature or have enough public pressure brought on the state legislature that they would end up getting rid of this. Okay? All right. 3 minutes after 7, appreciate the email, emailing Bill at BillMeyerShow.com.
News this hour from townhall.com.